The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, with John Mueller. Mondays and Wednesdays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
South of the border, down Mexico way, that's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play.
Hi, everybody. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. The one-of-a-kind show that tells you what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire in Latin America. It's a fact that millions of Europeans and North Americans have already made that big move south of the border. You might know someone who already has. Maybe it's your dream to do it someday. Well, it's a big move, and it's not to be taken lightly. And that's just what this show is all about. So let's get started.
South of the border.
In a previous show, I told you that Latin American governments, every last one of them, with the exception of Cuba and Venezuela, have adopted and passed practically every law that we have up in the first world. And that includes pretty much all the traffic laws that we have up in the first world. And on a previous show, I also told you that Latin Americans only enforce a very tiny percentage of those laws. But enforcement always gets much better right before elections, so the party in power can brag about it. That's when you'll see government spokesmen all over the news, and you'll see how the government has bought up acres of billboard space, proclaiming the latest reduction in street crime, or how nutrition or medical help for the poor has suddenly increased by an order of magnitude, or how this president, mayor, or governor has given the country 5 new bridges or 600 kilometers of new roads. And just like in the first world, the naive public buys every word of it. That means the same party and the same people and even the same families go through the same revolving door and keep getting re-elected over and over again. Does that sound familiar to you North Americans out there? Anyway, like I said, Latin America has all the laws and statutes that we have up in the first world. And the only time they're really serious about enforcing them across the board is right before an election, or if there's a huge public outcry along with protests in the streets to try to get the government to enforce one particular law that's been seriously neglected. And because everybody knows it's not been well enforced, and that lack of enforcement has a huge negative impact on a large segment of the population, sometimes the government actually does something about it. You know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. Now, one particular case that seems to be on the minds of everybody in Latin America is what they call express robberies. Now, how this works is you'll be sitting in your car at a stoplight or idling in traffic, and suddenly a motorcycle will pull up next to you with two passengers wearing helmets. And the guy riding in the back of the motorcycle will stick a gun in your face and ask for your cell phone or laptop or whatever else you have in the front seat of your car. And usually, this is done in broad daylight in heavy traffic. And of course, you won't be able to read their license plates numbers because it'll either be somehow obscured or just missing. Now, according to some statistics, these so-called express robberies are considered the second most common types of theft in Latin America. The first being the robbery of passengers on city buses. Now, I did mention in another show that expats should avoid riding buses. And for just that reason, because if you ride the buses with any regularity, you're liable to get robbed. So it's the same story throughout Latin America. Buses just keep getting robbed. It's been going on like that for years, and the government doesn't do much about it. The fact is, there's really no incentive for the government to do anything. Since the people who ride the buses are lower class, the ones that can't afford a car, and don't have any pull, political or otherwise. So the government just ignores it. But those express robberies, that's a different story. When you have two guys on a motorcycle robbing people in cars, well, just like everywhere else, people who drive cars have a little more money and have some pull. They can write letters, they can get on the internet, they can organize, and guess what? They do. But most of all, express robbers on motorcycles prefer to rob women who are easy marks. They scare easy and they won't fight back. And many of the women who've been victimized are wives, sisters, mothers, aunts, and mistresses of government bureaucrats and businessmen. And lately, there's been such an outcry from the car-driving public that special laws have been passed in cities where practically all the express robberies occur. The first effort was to pass a law that prohibited passengers on motorcycles. But this is the third world. So naturally, after some months, the police got lax on enforcement and express robberies shot up again. Then, after more public outcries and a ton of op-ed pieces in all the papers. Governments passed laws to put even more restrictions on motorcycles. Now, they force every motorcycle driver to have his license number stenciled on his helmet and on his jacket. And right after they passed that law, express robberies went way down. But as usual, after a few months, enforcement got lax and robberies shot up again. So as it stands right now, even a year or two after all these measures were started, if you're in any big city in Latin America, you're bound to see motorcyclists that just don't comply. And the police, well, they don't seem to be fazed at all. In fact, when you see a police roadblock, which is a very common thing in Latin America, you can see the motorcyclists buzz right by without stopping, and the cops don't or can't do a thing. In fact, I asked a cop why they let motorcyclists pass through the roadblocks without stopping, even when there's two on a bike or some other obvious violation. The cop shook his head and said, "It's just impossible to follow one of those guys. They have maneuverability, and once they hit traffic, they can just weave in and out of cars like a snake and leave a cop car stuck in a bottleneck." So why don't the cops have their own motorcycle squads? Well, they do, but it's not the greatest idea down in the tropics, and they aren't much of a deterrent. Since much of Latin America is in the tropics, and the tropics only have two seasons, the rainy season and the dry season, and during the rainy season, it rains like you've never seen it up north, and you sure can't drive a motorcycle in that. And then there's the maintenance issue, which always seems to come up when we talk about Latin America. It seems every big Latin American city has a government vehicle graveyard. It's a municipal junkyard for cop cars and motorcycles and pretty much every government vehicle that doesn't work or has been junked for whatever reason. And there are three main reasons why a government car ends up in the government junkyard. It's either been totaled out in a crash, it's been stripped for parts by the policemen or government workers themselves to make a little extra dough on the side, of course. And finally, a government car or motorcycle will end up in the junkyard for simple lack of maintenance. And sometimes it's some far-off first world country that's to blame for that. Because you see, first world countries have this recurrent habit of donating brand new fleets of vehicles to Latin American police and fire departments, somehow expecting the Latin American government on the receiving end to do the necessary maintenance to keep the fleet going. Well, I'm sorry to say that practically never happens. And you can't really blame the Latins. You have to put the fault directly on the first world governments who've done the donating. I can't tell you how many times I've picked up the local newspaper only to see some smiling first world ambassador. The ambassador from South Korea, Japan, Singapore, Austria, Denmark, wherever. Anyway, you're bound to see some foreign first world ambassador shaking hands with the police chief in some Latin American municipality. In Panama, Costa Rica, Bolivia, Argentina, wherever. And what it is a photo op where the ambassador is handing over a fleet of brand new vehicles and everybody's happy. Except if you happen to drive by the government junkyard a year or two later and you see that now maybe half of that beautiful fleet of Toyota pickups are in a broken heap of twisted pieces. And it's a shame, and every expat knows about this. We've all seen those junkyards. But the first world donators with the deep pockets, they only seem to care about that photo op on the day they hand that expensive gift over to that backwards Latin American municipality. It's all about that first world feel-good thing. You know, like when you send $100 off to Sally Struthers for some poor kid in Africa. I mean, has anybody actually gone to Africa to see what those kids are doing with that money? Or if the money ever got there? But once these first world countries make a big donation, like a fleet of Toyota pickup trucks for an impoverished Latin American police force, a resource-poor police force that doesn't even have the gas to keep the fleet running. Well, nobody seems to care about that, as long as the brand new trucks are delivered. What happens later is not the concern of the first world donator. For them, the job is done. They did their good deed, and have a photo op to prove it. And at that point, they always seem to wash their hands of the whole thing. One expat I know says it's like giving a 16-year-old kid the keys to your Corvette. And you know what? He's right. So when you're walking or driving through Latin America, when you see the occasional policeman parked in his car alongside the road, apparently doing nothing, don't jump to the conclusion that they're a bunch of lazy no-counts. At least, that shouldn't be your first thought. Not right away, anyway. They're probably parked alongside the road because they just don't have enough gas to motor around all day. That's a chronic problem throughout Latin America. Most patrol cars are only issued a gallon or two a day. And even at that, the cops are known for siphoning out a bit and selling it. That's just one of the ways a cop can earn a little money on the side. But we were talking about express robberies, weren't we? About how in Latin America, two guys in a motorcycle will come up alongside of you, stick a gun in your face, and demand your cell phone. You think that knowing that's their method should be a lesson to everybody. But it isn't. Now, it makes sense that thieves would love the high-end electronics, like Blackberries and iPhones and laptop computers. And of course, in Latin America, it's just the same. Thieves are looking for those high-end items. So rule number one should be, don't buy an expensive Blackberry or iPhone. And if you do, never use it while you're driving in your car in the city. Anybody who's on a motorcycle weaving in and out of traffic in the big city, if he's looking to pull off an express robbery, he just has to hone in on a woman in a high-end car with an expensive phone. So don't tempt fate. Now, if you've been listening closely, you might be thinking that if you're in the big city in Latin America and you see two people on a motorcycle, knowing that it's against the law to ride that way, your first thought is that these guys are up to no good and that you better be on high alert. Well, that's true if you see that the two guys are wearing helmets and there's no sign of a license plate, though you hardly want to get close enough to find that out. But the fact is, all Latin American cities, big and small, are just jam-packed with motorcycles. Most of them absolute wrecks, blowing so much black smoke that you can barely believe they run at all. But in countries where half the population lives on less than $2 a day, you can imagine, even the junkiest motorcycle is a ticket to the big time. And what you'll find with motorcycle drivers is that there's a blatant disregard for any laws whatsoever. You'll see them driving along the road without mufflers or license plates. Mufflers and gas tanks held together with chicken wire and duct tape. That is, if they even have mufflers. With no brake lights or headlights or fenders. In fact, one expat I know, who was a Harley Davidson repairman up in the first world, he told me that more than 50% of the motorcycles in Latin America would never pass a routine road inspection up in the first world, and that most of them, in fact, are pretty much death traps. But even though you'll probably never find an expat on one of those chicken wire and duct tape motorcycles, motorcycles can be real hazards for anyone driving a car. It's not unusual any day of the week to see a motorcycle rider going the wrong way down a one-way street, coming at you head-on, only to swerve at the very last second and miss you by an inch. And every expat who's ever driven a car in Latin America has more than one story of a motorcycle driver who scuffed him or scraped him or ripped off his rearview mirror, weaving through traffic like a madman. Now, when a motorcycle driver scrapes or even sideswipes your car, they look at you, shrug their shoulders, and give you that sorry look, as if to say, "Hey, buddy, it's a jungle out here. We're all in this together, and things happen." And one other thing you should know. I've heard from expats that people who drive Harley Davidsons, BMWs, and other expensive motorcycles, well, they're the only motorcycle drivers in Latin America that actually carry insurance and keep it up to date. And they only take insurance because it covers theft. In other words, if you get into an accident with a motorcycle driver, and he's not driving a Harley or a BMW. And let me assure you, only 1 out of 10,000 motorcycles is a Harley or a BMW. Anyway, whatever happens, the motorcycle driver will not have insurance. You can be sure of that. But if you're an expat, you better have at least liability insurance on your own car. And don't worry, it'll hardly set you back $100 a year. But beware if you don't have insurance. It doesn't matter if the other guy does or not, and he probably won't. The fact is, if you don't have a current insurance policy to show the cop when he shows up at the accident, you can be sure they'll impound your car and tow it to one of those municipal garages. Even if it's in perfect working order, the police will automatically have it towed if you don't have insurance. And worse yet, it can be stuck in a municipal garage for weeks. And you can be sure that when you finally get your car, even though it's been held in a fenced-in, secure, government-run, municipal parking garage, you can be sure your car will be missing something, whether it's the battery, the tires, the rims, the stereo. Something of value will be gone, and you can count on it. So your expat files tip for today is spend $100 for liability insurance, and you'll never have your car towed to a municipal garage. When I mentioned before that the average Latin motorcycle rider breaks every rule in the book, I wasn't kidding. Since the average Latin guy doesn't have a car, his all-around work and family vehicle just might be a 20-year-old 75cc Kawasaki with only one working brake and a broken headlight. But that doesn't bother the average Latin guy. He still uses it as a family workhorse vehicle. If you're in a Latin American city, not a day will go by where you won't see some guy driving his motorcycle with the back end piled sky high with anything you can imagine. Boards and boxes and metal and mattresses, even 100-pound tanks of gas propane hanging out 2 feet on each side. And they don't care a bit about the weight. The back tire could be almost flat, and yet they're completely unconcerned. Now you might think it's absolutely unthinkable, driving a motorcycle through dense traffic with a full 100-pound tank of gas propane strapped to the back, like a retro rocket. Well, that's bad, all right, but these guys actually do something much worse. At least in the eyes of expats. Well, because that 20-year-old rice rocket is the family vehicle, it's not unusual for pretty much the whole family, up to 5 people, riding along, not a care in the world, on a 90cc Kawasaki. And you see it every day, in the city or the country, in light traffic or heavy, 3, 4, and 5 people, little kids, babies, mothers, grandmas, they all pile on the family vehicle. It's amazing how they do it, but they do it somehow. And you're especially likely to see heavy loads on Sunday when everyone's all dressed up to go to church. Now for a new expat, this is always a shock, especially when you see a mom and a dad and a couple of infants ripping along down the highway like everything's A-OK. And of course there's accidents. You read about horrendous crack-ups in the paper every day. Sure, they're breaking the law. It's the same old story. It's just another law in the books that doesn't get enforced. The fact is, multiple passengers on tiny little motorcycles is so widespread, and there have been so many accidents and deaths, that Latin governments have started to produce public service announcements that run frequently on TV. Lately, when I was in the Dominican Republic, I saw a rather clever PSA on that very topic. It showed a middle-class Dominican guy, middle-class by their standards, walking out of his house, starting up his motorcycle, and taking off for work. Along the way, he picks up a worker in a hard hat. Then 2 school kids jump on. And at the next corner, a lady hands him a little baby. Now he's driving along in this motorcycle with 5 people and a little baby in his arms. Then the camera pans to a car about 2 blocks away with an inattentive driver adjusting his radio and talking on his cell phone at the same time, coming up on the next curve a little bit too fast. Then the camera pans to the sky. You hear a skid and a crash. Now, all over Latin America, public service announcements just like that are being run. But if you think about it a little bit, in the mind of an expat, a commercial like that only says one thing. It pretty much says Latin governments are incapable of enforcing a simple law. Now, some of you might remember back in the 60s and the 70s, back in the United States, when they first enacted a seatbelt law. And people only started complying in a big way when the fines started getting pretty heavy if the police stopped you and you weren't wearing one. Remember that? Well, it's a little different in Latin America. Down there, the government can put any fine it wants on any violations it wants to. But the hard part is getting the police to enforce a law, which means getting police to issue tickets to offenders, which is itself the real problem as most expats see it. Because if you keep your eyes open, you'll notice that the police themselves are guilty of violating practically every traffic law in the books. Many times they're the worst offenders of all. You'll see that they don't wear seatbelts, and their brake lights don't work, and they don't signal when they change lanes, and the motorcycle cops ride 2 to a bike, and they don't use helmets, and they drive the wrong way down one-way streets. And they run red lights when they're bored or when they're on their way to a donut fest. Yep, even in Latin America, cops love donuts, like water and chocolate.
South of the border.
Have you ever wished you could drive around in a bulletproof car? I imagine it's a great feeling of security, knowing that you could drive through a hail of bullets and everything will come out okay. And why am I even mentioning it? Well, the other day I stopped in a new car dealership in Salvador, just to look around and ask a few questions. And I got to talking with one of the salesmen, and he said things were really bad and that car sales were way down for 3 years in a row, especially now since the government has passed banking and financial transaction laws which means you can no longer walk into the dealership with a suitcase full of cash and buy a brand new Mercedes. No questions asked. Like you were able to do in the old days. He said those kind of suitcase, cash on the barrel head, no questions transactions made up a good percentage of their business. But now if you pay in cash, you gotta fill out a financial transaction form and report the origin of the money to prove that it's clean. And the dealership can't deposit big chunks of cash in the bank anymore either without answering the same questions. Which means it's more difficult to use drug money or money stolen from the government coffers to buy big items like cars. Then the salesman told me they're making a ton of money on another part of their business, bulletproofing cars. He says they're bulletproofing about 25 cars a month to the tune of $10,000 to $20,000 a piece. And they're all high-end luxury cars, Mercedes, BMWs, Volvos, and Jaguars. And he said every one of the clients had a story to tell about an attempted hijacking, kidnapping, or robbery. And he also was quick to point out exactly what I've been telling you all along. Criminals don't come after you if you drive a common everyday car that's not brand new. Then he laughed and told me, you know what? My boss has a $100,000 luxury car parked in his garage, but he mostly drives his 4-year-old Nissan. And the guy's an owner of a luxury car dealership. Now that guy has the right idea. Talking to a grade school teacher down in Peru, she invited me to her class, which held about 40 students, and she quizzed me a little bit, mostly about grade school kids up in the first world and how they differed from grade school kids down in Latin America. She said, you know, kids up in the first world must be really healthy compared to kids down in Peru because, she said, that she'd spent about a month in Houston, Texas. She said she'd visited some supermarkets and some of those super warehouse food stores, and she noticed that almost every packaged food was fortified with something, either vitamins, minerals, or other additives, and that down in Peru, practically nothing is fortified unless it's imported. She mentioned that when she bought some eggs in the supermarket in Dallas, even those eggs were fortified with vitamins and omega-3 fatty acids. And she said, you know, in those supermarkets, the food is so perfect. The oranges are so symmetrical. The apples so shiny. The pineapples so tall and majestic. She said, you know, you can get that stuff in Peru, but only at certain stores, ones that cater to middle class and upper middle class people. And you're going to pay a lot more for it. Then she said, look at the eggs that we have down here. They're nothing like the ones you have up in the United States. Up there, they're so clean and washed and sanitized and perfect. And down here, you can't find a dozen eggs that don't have grit or dirt or feathers or worse, stuck to them. And she's right. All over Latin America, you cannot buy a dozen eggs without grit or feathers or worse, stuck to them. It may be just a little, and it may be a lot, but you're always going to find some residue on your eggs. And almost all new expats find this pretty disgusting. And if you complain about it or say something to the local people, they just look at you like you're nuts. Now you're probably thinking, isn't that terribly unsanitary? I mean, we all know the process of the chicken and the egg, and we'd rather not think about it. Then I asked the teacher how often her primary school kids got sick. And in the back of my mind, I was thinking about the eggs and the way they sell food on the street, and that except for a few lucky countries, there's a general shortage of fresh water throughout Latin America. And the teacher said, you know what? My school kids are almost never sick. And she went into her desk and pulled out a book with attendance records in it. And she was right. In fact, for the previous month, she had only 3 kids out sick out of 40. Now, to first world people, this might seem like kind of a paradox. Down here, these kids barely get sick at all, and they live in conditions much less sanitary than in the first world. Well, then I set her straight. I had to admit that as a kid, I wasn't sick much. But as for kids growing up today, based on what I hear from my friends and family up in the States, kids take a lot of sick days. One teacher up in the first world told me that she figures there's about 3 times as many absences than what occurred back in the 60s and 70s when talking strictly about grade school kids. And of course, that's not a scientific study, but I can believe it. Now, I don't know if that's because first world parents are more lenient, the kids are more creative, are better liars, or they actually do get more sick than the kids did in the 60s and the 70s. But one thing's for sure, Latin kids do not miss much school. Now, even stranger is the fact that when you drive through any middle-class Latin American neighborhood, you'll see kids running around barefoot, playing in the dirt, throwing sand at each other, kicking the can in the gutter, rolling in the grass, together with a dog and a chicken or two, who also live in the yard and play in the same grass and do exactly what dogs and chickens do. And young kids do what they do. They put their fingers in their ears, their eyes, their hair, and in their mouths. And isn't it funny? They rarely get sick. Now, you can draw your own conclusions on this. I mean, you might have your own ideas about immunity and exposure to pathogens throughout your life. But as for me, I've been in Latin America nearly 20 years, and I still can't eat the food from most street vendors because I'll get sick. It's a good bet that how you react to the food down here as an expat will have a lot to do with what you were exposed to early in your life. Whether you played in the dirt or in a sandbox, if you ran around barefoot, or if you had a salamander or a turtle or a dog. You could say humans are undergoing a kind of international hygiene experiment, as everything in the first world seems to be becoming more and more clean, aseptic, and sterilized. The third world keeps plodding along, picking up this or that idea from the first world, as long as it doesn't cost too much. But all in all, staying pretty much the same. I mean, what can you expect when half the population of Latin America lives on less than $2 a day? So who's right and who's wrong? Maybe it's a little of both. Who knows? The experiment's not over yet. But think about this for a while. I was just reading in a first world paper that it's been determined that in the United States, 1 in 20,000 eggs has salmonella virus in it. Well, one thing I can tell you, in Latin America, at least 2 eggs out of every dozen not only has a visible clump of organic grunge stuck on the shell, you'll almost always find little balls of feathers and other organic material stuck in the box or on the eggshells. So expats really have 3 options. You could take the eggs home and wash them. You could crack them open like they are, look the other way and eat them like the locals, or quit eating eggs altogether, which might be the best solution for you and the chickens. But for me, it shows that there's an awful lot of business opportunities down here for expats. I mean, obviously, there's a market for clean, washed eggs down here, and it seems so ridiculously simple, but it'll probably take an expat to pull it off.
South of the border, down Mexico way, that's where I fell in love. When
you've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, a one-of-a-kind show produced and compiled deep in the heart of Latin America. And of course, you can always email me with any of your questions about Latin America. expatfiles@progressiveradionetwork.com. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture in old Spanish lace, just for a tender while I kissed the smile upon her face. 'Cause it was fiesta and we were so gay. South of the border, Mexico way.